Concerns about housing affordability in Utah have become acute, to say the least. In Utah Foundation surveys dating back to 2008, housing affordability had never been a top 10 issue. That changed in 2020. In an initial Utah priority survey before the economic shutdown, we found that housing affordability had surged to become the second most important issue. In a new survey several months later, it remained in the top 10, even after the pandemic crisis began to dominate the public's focus. To be sure, costs in some areas of Utah have been rising rapidly. Over the course of 2020, Utah saw some of the nation's very highest increases in home prices. In this edition of Utah Thrives, I talk with Utah Foundation Senior Analyst Christopher Collard and Research Director Sean Tigan about what they've been learning as they dig in on the housing cost issue. This is Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Peter Reichard. Sean and Christopher, we have recently undertaken a series of briefs of various sizes looking at housing affordability. Christopher, can you talk a little bit about the trajectory of public opinion about housing affordability and why it might be changing?
Utah Foundation, in our research, when we first started kind of noticing it popping up in people's attention back in 2018 when we did our quality of life survey, and housing affordability was one of the things that was most important to people that Utah was performing the least well on. And so that's kind of when it started grabbing our attention. And then as we did our survey in 2020, housing affordability was definitely one of the top issues when we kind of reached out to people and asked them, you know, what are the top issues on your mind? And then when we gave people a list of 18 issues to prioritize, housing affordability was definitely among the top three. But then we had this 2020 pandemic that kind of reordered people's priorities a little bit, and housing affordability kind of found its way down to seventh as kind of just the pandemic in general, as well as kind of its related impacts on education, healthcare, and other factors kind of made those other factors a little bit more pertinent. So it's currently around seventh on a list of 18 this year, kind of in this medium importance range. And that's kind of how it's trended over the past few years.
Go ahead, Sean.
Well, I was just going to say, for good reason, you know, if you look at the Salt Lake Tribune's database of housing prices since 2003, you can see there are neighborhoods where, like, you could have gotten a home in Rose Park for $80,000. That was the median price home in Rose Park. It is now four times that, you know, 18 years later. So there's a reason why people are a little bit concerned about it, particularly people who are first-time home buyers who don't have all that crazy amount of equity that they've been racking up over the past several years, and also people who are like, what are my kids going to do? Like, my kids can't live here. They're going to have to move to, you know, either some kind of rural community or just farther away or to a different state altogether.
That brings up a big difference we did see in the responses in terms of demographics. Younger generations are more concerned about housing affordability than older generations. That's obviously for the same reason that you're addressing, Sean, which is the fact that they're trying to get on that first rung of the ladder, and it's much more difficult than it used to be.
Yeah, certainly.
Now, Christopher, can you talk about some of the other differences we saw in terms of concerns about housing affordability? Who was more worried and who was less worried?
So younger Utahns were definitely more likely to rank housing affordability among their top five issues. And also, when we asked these younger Utahns, they were also a little bit more likely to prioritize, you know, when they're thinking about housing affordability, you know, you could be thinking about your own housing affordability. You could be thinking about housing affordability for lower income Utahns or just kind of housing affordability for first time home buyers. And so when you look at these younger people, they're definitely looking at kind of their own housing affordability problems as they try to enter this housing market without necessarily a lot of savings readily available to them. Some other interesting findings were, you know, liberal voters in Utah tended to be a little bit more concerned about housing for low-income Utahns, while conservative voters in Utah tended to be more worried about first-time home buyers. Also, interestingly, Hispanic Utahns were also kind of give this higher priority to first-time home buyers. And then also the unemployed, not surprisingly, they were kind of worried about their own housing affordability, while retired individuals kind of had this broader view of housing for low-income Utahns in general.
And it's interesting to see, really, that all Utahns are more concerned about housing affordabilities for people other than themselves, whether for low-income Utahns or first-time home buyers, and not so much their own affordability. Now, we're talking about Utahns broadly here. But this does kind of speak to something we've talked about or addressed in past reports, which is the idea that if we get more people into the home ownership picture, then we have to worry about them less. Suddenly they're less concerned about their own housing picture. Sean, can you talk about that?
I guess I think that that's true up to a point. I mean, you have you can worry about them less, but as we saw during the housing bubble in the late 2000s, I mean, there was just an enormous amount of foreclosure, and I don't know if it's a correction or just a blip, but you saw that Utah was up into the 72% of households were home ownership households, and then that dropped down into like 67% just a few years later, because so many people just you couldn't afford that house, they couldn't afford those mortgages. The problem, I guess, with having these price increases and having like I'd mentioned in Rose Park, but also really across the Wasatch Front and the Wasatch Back in Utah, is that you've got people that are possibly getting into their first home and are pinching pennies to be able to afford those mortgage payments. And then at the something comes up, you lose a job, you have a recession that we fortunately weren't hit too hard by the recession in Utah, but you have a recession and suddenly we've got a foreclosure issue again.
But certainly you're less vulnerable to price increases over time once you're locked into a mortgage that presumably is somewhat affordable to you if the mortgage broker did their homework. Whereas if you're a renter, you're subject to the ever-increasing rents over time.
Absolutely. And rents, right now are outrageous for a lot of people.
Let's go ahead and move on to a discussion of rents. What's the picture looking like there, Christopher?
So Utah's rents, or I guess more specifically, we looked at kind of the Salt Lake metro area, since kind of earlier studies had kind of indicated like Salt Lake metro area tends to be where the place where people are most worried about housing affordability. And so when we looked at metro rents in kind of the Salt Lake County area, the rents there are higher than 94% of all other places across the United States. So it's definitely a more expensive area. But when you compare it with metro areas across the West, like Boise, like Las Vegas, Phoenix, and Denver, we kind of fall in the middle of the pack. It's an expensive place to rent, but pretty comparable to other large metro areas.
Other large metro areas in our region, yes. The Mountain States
in the
region.
Mountain West.
Christopher, can you also address changes over time in terms of rentals?
We looked over the past 5 years, and we looked at these kind of five large metros in the Mountain West. They had a little bit of different trends, but almost everybody across the board saw some of the biggest increases from 2019 to 2020. Kind of during this pandemic area, there was some steep increases in the cost of housing among renters.
Let's move on to the home sale price escalation picture. How is that looking? Go ahead, Christopher.
Like looking over time, we see some similar increases where there's kind of some big jumps in 2020. Now in Utah, looking at the statewide, a lot of that big jump can be explained by home purchases kind of in Summit and Wasatch County, where there's a lot of second homes. If we kind of factor out those and you look just at, again, the Salt Lake metro area, we do see some continued increases, but they're more moderate. And again, they kind of just fall in this middle range between the different metropolitan areas of the Mountain West.
Gentlemen, thinking about the Utah economy as it continues to surge, thinking about other pressures like high labor costs and high material costs, and particularly thinking about lumber costs right now, is there any reason to think that we wouldn't have continued upward pressure on construction costs and home costs, Sean?
Yeah, there's no reason to think that there won't be a continued increase. Unfortunately, for, you know, the people that are really now trying to get into home ownership. I mean, you see that lumber costs are, this is just a very recent article in the Tribune, lumber costs are expected to account for, the increased lumber costs are account for about an extra $35,000 per home. And then, and you look at the, there's just so much demand out there, and there are very few homes available to people to buy. And, you know, Christopher mentioned Wasatch County. Like, Heber was one of the fastest growing in Wasatch, one of the fastest growing places over the past few years in the United States. And, you know, it's not a huge place to begin with, but they're not all second homes. It's like people are looking for places to live, and there's some land up there, and maybe that commute doesn't look so bad, particularly if we can do a little bit more of this remote working that people are getting used to since the beginning of the pandemic.
Part of these rising costs, and we think about lumber and the lumber mills, part of these rising costs are due to supply shocks that came with the coronavirus pandemic and operations that maybe were overly aggressive in winding down. Christopher, what would be the prospect of the fact that those operations may be gearing back up again, providing some relief?
Lumber, especially like softwood, which is used for construction, is in a really interesting place right now. The Canadian and U.S. markets are pretty well integrated, and it's kind of seeing similar trends both in Canada and the U.S. You know, when the pandemic came along, there was kind of a thought that, you know, during a pandemic, there's not going to be a lot of demand for houses. We're going to kind of wind down some of the lumber processing that's going on. And then it turns out that when people were staying at home, they just decided to do a lot of home improvement projects, where the kind of this demand for softwood lumber would be kind of a key part of that. In addition, like, the housing markets really kind of started taking off, you know, increasing demand. So people ramped down production, both in terms of like trying to stay safe in lumber mills, you know, as we're trying to kind of contain the initial wave of this pandemic, but also just because it was thought that there wouldn't be a great need for processed lumber as things were going along. But then there was a huge surge in demand, and our lumber mills, both in the U.S. and Canada, haven't quite been able to keep up with that, or even kind of recover to a point where, you know, it's still a big demand problem. It's unclear at what point, you know, that will be overcome. But kind of the thought right now is that logs are cheap, but 2x4s aren't. The problem is really kind of in the milling part, where we need to kind of work through that, you know. From an economic point of view, higher prices is going to kind of provide this extra incentive for lumber mills to maybe put in longer hours so they can turn a larger profit while prices are high. And, you know, that in turn will hopefully bring prices back down. So you hope for some kind of economic correction, as there's some incentives to kind of encourage that. But in terms of timeline, we have no idea.
Over the past year, and really longer than a year, there's been a lot of discussion around the proverbial barbecue pit about Californians coming into Utah, and among other possible ills that they may bring with them, and I say that tongue in cheek, that they are driving up housing prices. You all dug into this and found that that isn't necessarily the main driver of some of our pressures, although in other states, that may be more the case. What did you find there, Christopher?
Yeah, so just to be clear, we at Utah Foundation, we're not saying that Californians aren't coming in. The main thing we're saying is there's no data to support that they're coming in at any higher or lower rates than they have historically. But in terms of kind of talking about the housing crunch and the kind of the population prices, we did notice some interesting trends. So, I mean, the most interesting thing is during the pandemic, a lot of cities have kind of seen their populations fall, not so much from people leaving. I mean, there's been some of that, especially in like the mega cities of New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco. But the bigger trend is just there's been fewer people moving into cities overall. And so Denver, Seattle really kind of typify this, where there's just a lot fewer people moving into these big cities. Provo, Orem also kind of saw this trend, where there was a fewer people moving into the city. But Salt Lake really kind of defied the trend. What they saw is there was just people did not leave at the same rates they have in the past. And so while people moving in, there was just a fewer amount of people moving in a little bit, But the big change was just Salt Lake people living in the Salt Lake metro aren't moving out at the same rates they used to. And that is kind of functionally equivalent to kind of seeing a population surge.
But that's less fun than blaming Californians.
Oh yeah, it's much more fun to blame Californians.
Yeah, I mean, this way we have to blame ourselves. We only have ourselves to blame for not leaving this glorious place.
So we have another active project related to housing affordability. We're focused on the so-called missing middle. Sean, what is the missing middle and why are we going to be addressing that in a report in the coming months?
Missing middle focuses, you know, a little bit on middle income, but really the bulk of the idea is focusing on middle size. So you're looking at not maybe single family 2,500, 3,000 square feet houses, but maybe you're looking at a duplex and they're a little bit smaller, and having a duplex that's a little bit smaller, it's going to be naturally a little bit more affordable, and maybe creating a little bit of density that creates maybe a little bit of more people on the street and more walkability and more thriving businesses close by. And so the idea is we're allowing for the development of duplexes and triplexes and fourplexes and these little cottage court things that are kind of neat and really a small-sized multifamily housing that integrates well with the community and that it doesn't like stick out, and it's not like some big building right next to my single-family lot, but it's something that really blends in with the neighborhood so you don't notice it. For instance, I've got a house down the street. Before I started working on this report, I never thought much about the house. You know, I'd see it. Oh, there's a big house, and you go along, and finally went up for sale. And I was like, what the heck? That's a duplex? So that's kind of what we mean, is the stuff that really fits in with the community well. But we've got an aging population in Utah. People might be downsizing a little bit. We've got this incredible upward pressure on home prices. You might be able to get a little bit of affordability, even though some of the stuff now, like townhomes, some townhomes are super luxury townhomes, and they're more expensive than my single family house is ever going to be. But it's something that allows for a little bit more flexibility for builders and a little bit more choice for consumers of homes, and hopefully will ameliorate some of the issues related to these upward pressures on home prices.
And so we may be looking at different numbers of units per acre. We might be looking at a broader variety of housing types. You might be looking at smaller lots, things like this. Is this a completely revolutionary idea that has never been tried before, Sean?
It was never tried except for all the times all throughout history that people have been using this. And in fact, it was the norm and has just fallen out of favor due to people kind of focusing on either single family units or, you know, sky rise apartments. You just don't see that kind of variety like you used to. If you go to a lot of older neighborhoods across the United States, you're going to see that variety. You're going to see a lot of duplexes and threeplexes and fourplexes and a mixture of homes that you, and when we go on vacation places, people are like, oh my God, I love this community. It's so cool. This is the best little community. And it's like, yeah, you love that community because it's not just a bunch of single family homes, but a community where people of, you know, hopefully some different levels of income can live, and maybe there's some businesses and it's walkable and it's got this sense of place. And the idea of this missing middle is to see if we can't look back a little bit and maybe create some of that again.
Any other grand revelations that we've had in recent months with regard to housing affordability, or maybe not so grand revelations, Christopher?
Or one thing I've been following lately is the kind of the development plans for the west side of the Salt Lake County. It used to be known as the West Bench, but it involves a lot more than just kind of the Ochre Mountains. It involves, you know, everything in between, as other cities kind of have to prepare for the growth that's going to happen there. So Salt Lake County's done a lot of surveys. They've had a lot of people kind of push back, saying, you know, we don't necessarily want growth. We don't necessarily want development. We don't necessarily want density. That's a legitimate position to have. The one thing I just want to bring out or point out is there's trade-offs with that decision. And the trade-off that tends to be with, you know, if you want more single-family homes, if you want larger lot sizes, things are probably going to be a little bit more expensive. And, you know, Salt Lake County is doing this planning process, but they're not doing this planning process because they're driving the growth. They're doing this planning process in response to the growth. And that growth is happening both because Utah, you know, we in Utah, we have a large family sizes, you know, we have a high birth rate. These are our children that we're kind of preparing for. And then second, you know, we have a great economy, you know, and the impact of having a great economy is that people from other places are going to want to come here and be part of that. So kind of facing, you know, having a great economy, having a high birth rate kind of results in this growth pressure. And that's either going to either cause higher prices as things become, you know, a little bit less available and people have to find different ways of getting what they're looking for. Or we have to like find ways to make things more affordable by shifting to higher density or finding other solutions like this.
Sean, last word.
Most of the growth, it's internal growth. I mean, most of the growth that Utah is experiencing is just us having babies and those babies growing up into being homeowners or renters. You know, if we don't want growth, then we're either going to have to quit having babies or going to have to export a bunch of our people. But, you know, as we noted with this, especially in 2020, with people not leaving, particularly Salt Lake County, I mean, there's some pretty great things about this place. And that's not going to happen. So we're going to have to basically figure out a better way to approach this than just blaming it on, you know, people from California or where else. We're going to have to figure out some things to kind of work through this, unless we want to have a terrible economy. But we also have a great economy, like Christopher said. So I think we just have to figure out the best way to maneuver through this.
But surely we can find some things to blame Californians for. So, right. You know, otherwise, what will Let's talk just... about? To all the Californians listening, that was a joke. All right. Great talking with you all today. Thank you.
Thanks.
This has been Utah Thrives, Utah Foundation podcast. Follow our work at utahfoundation.org.